Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Horror Weekly, Hidden Horror Gems. Except, unfortunately, there's been a slight change of plans. It's going to turn into Gem Singular for a couple of reasons. I just sat down to start recording this, and literally right beforehand, the news broke that the novelist Cormac McCarthy has passed away at the age of 89. That's very upsetting to me. He leaves behind an amazing body of work, but I can't think of anything less Cormac McCarthy-like than to not continue on with what you're planning to do. So in the spirit of that, I'm just going to do the episode and give it my best. Stephen King tweeted like 2 minutes ago saying, Cormac McCarthy, maybe the greatest American novelist of my time, has passed away at 89. He was full of years and created a fine body of work, but I still mourn his passing. I also caught an amazing anecdote from a profile about him near Stephen King's mention that said, and I quote, McCarthy never showed much interest in a steady job, a trait that seems to have annoyed both his ex-wives. We lived in total poverty, says the second Annie D. Lyle, now a restaurateur in Florida. For nearly 8 years, they lived in a dairy barn outside Knoxville. We were bathing in the lake, she says, with some nostalgia. Someone would call up and offer him $2,000 to come speak at a university about his books, and he would tell them that everything he had to say was there on the page. So we would eat beans for another week. Amazing. So we're going to do a weird little tribute at the end of this episode, but I'm not going to turn this into the Cormac McCarthy episode. And I'm also emotionally just thrown because the hidden horror gem that we were mainly going to talk about today is one that I'm so excited about that to have this butt up against like the sad news is giving me the most like dissonant Jekyll and Hyde feeling I've ever had recording an episode for Horror Weekly. So if this all gets a little ragged and goes off the rails, I understand anyone who jumps out now. It's fitting that Stephen King was one of the first people to pop up to give a tribute to Cormac McCarthy in terms of this episode, because it is a Stephen King property. Now, I know what you must be thinking right off the jump. How could we be talking about a hidden horror gem if it's a Stephen King thing? There's no such thing, right? Like, no matter how deep a Stephen King cut you get, there's going to be just a huge block of horror fans that's going to know it because of his popularity. And normally that would be true. But, dear listeners, it is true, and for a very unique reason. A miracle has occurred in the horror genre, and I am so excited to share it with you. So The Langoliers, a 1995 TV miniseries based on Stephen King's 1988 novella by the same name, usually ranks somewhere among the most forgotten or the worst of King adaptations. The miniseries itself consisted of two parts, each roughly 1.5 hours each, and was written and directed by Tom Holland of Child's Play and Fright Night fame. The cast was pretty good, actually, featuring Dean Stockwell, who's one of my favorite all-time actors ever, David Morse, who I knew as the villain from Disturbia, but has done a lot of good work, Bronson Pinchot of Perfect Strangers fame as one of the villains of the piece, and Stephen King himself in an obligatory cameo role. There are a lot of other actors a little less known to me in this who do a fantastic job, actually, but the miniseries itself was a pretty much an unmitigated disaster. TV Guide, of all places. I can't believe there's insults being slung at the Langoliers from TV Guide, neither of which are any kind of relevant anymore. Calling it tedious and boring, saying it had cardboard characters, ludicrous special effects. A book on Stephen King said that Bronson Pinchot chews more scenery than all of the Langoliers put together, which is hilarious. And all the series did pretty well ratings-wise for ABC at the time. I can tell you, as someone who runs a horror community online, that out of, I don't know, maybe 7 years of doing it, I've seen the Langoliers posted about like maybe twice. So it's like, what, once every 2.5 years, someone in the horror community talks about it. So its legacy, except for a couple things we're going to get to, is pretty shallow. Okay, so now you're asking, well, where's the hidden horror gem? I've heard of the Langoliers. Well, this is where it gets amazing. There is a genius filmmaker named Aristoteles Marigos who has made a barely over an hour remix of the more than 3 hour Langoliers miniseries. And it is the best horror movie I have seen this year so far. It might even be the best movie that I've seen this year so far. This film of his is called The Timekeepers of Eternity. And it's so unique and odd that the entire internet can't even decide what it is. I saw it called a radical collage animation experiment. I saw it called a found footage appropriation. I saw it called an experimental reworking of the original. And I don't know what to call it myself, but it has to be seen to be believed. And I'm telling you, like, when I heard about this, I thought at best it would be a very small segment of the Hidden Horror Gems episode. And now, unlike the Langoliers that eat away things until there's nothing left, this thing has grown and grown in my affection until it's eating this entire episode. And take it from a skeptic, I thought I would only view this once because it's so strange that I couldn't imagine, especially since I had seen the Langoliers and read the Langoliers in their original forms, that material doesn't justify, the miniseries might not even have justified one full viewing, considering how bad it was. And now I have watched this thing like over and over, like I'm addicted to it. I've seen it 4 times in the last 2 days. If you're looking to fall in love with something horror and you can stand a lot of strangeness, this is it. So there's going to be a lot of spoilers here, and I'm going to cover some things in a little bit of detail. So if that bothers you at all or ruins your experience listening to a review, definitely go watch it. It's not that long. And then come back at this point. If you don't care, like, we're about to launch. Now, first of all, first miracle, it just trimmed the fat, right? Like, it took something that was 3 hours and boiled it down to just the essentials. How refreshing and amazing is that? I kind of liked the horror movie A Cure for Wellness, but it was disastrously too long. I was wishing when I was watching it that you could just chop this thing in half. And here, by some miracle, it has happened to the Langoliers. I'm going to combine the second and third miracles to try to describe them together because they're related. So there's a paper, crinkly, animated feel to this movie. And two things come of that that I never would have expected that just are mind-blowingly incredible. It saves all the good acting from the Langoliers and eliminates all the bad. It not only saves the good acting, it super enhances it. And I'll explain that in a second. And it takes all the terrible, legendarily bad special effects, especially the reveal of the Langoliers, which from my vague recollection of seeing it at the time it came out and talking to people who cared, since I was a huge Stephen King fan, The reveal of the Langoliers was so disastrously comical that even if you were on board for the rest of the miniseries, there was just no way to survive it. So it takes those special effects, but not just those special effects, the special effects of the Aurora Borealis in the Langoliers, the special effects of the plane, all of which look kind of Plan 9 from outer space bad, inexplicably in some points, and turns them into absolute things of scary beauty. So let me give you an example of one of these miracles in action. Early on in the movie, well, I suppose if you haven't seen the Langoliers, I'll just give a quick plot, right? So a bunch of people randomly who don't really know each other board a flight. The flight's midair. It's really late. They all go to sleep. And when they wake up, almost everyone on the plane is gone. It's kind of like the Rapture leftovers. What's that one kind of the Kirk Cameron Left Behind situation, right? Except for the ones who discover this, they were all asleep. They have no idea what's happening. And then they spend the rest of the movie trying to figure out what has caused this and why there's this horrendous, creepy sound that keeps coming closer to them and why the rules of the universe seem to have changed. So it's a really, really cool plot that had a lot of impact on things like Lost that came later. And we're going to get to that because there's an amazing connection there. But early in the movie, there's a scene where after the 10 people left on the plane, I think the count is 10, are just getting over the original shock of it, and they're trying to figure out what's happening. Bronson Pinchot, who plays a soon-to-be completely failed businessman, who is the worst possible person you could be next to on a flight besides like the loudest baby you can imagine. So Bronson Pinchot, playing this villain named Toomey, storms in to the back of the plane or the front of the plane, I can't remember which, must be front, and comes upon the David Morse, Captain Brian, and one of the passengers named Nick, who turns out to be a British secret agent and hitman who's headed to Boston for like a final mission and is very tough but very even keeled. So they're trying to break into the cockpit to get back control of the plane and figure out what the hell is happening before the plane crashes, and also look for where the hell did everybody go. And of course, Toomey storms in with a whole bunch of irrelevant complaints. I'm on my way to Boston for a meeting. Where are all the people who are missing? The plane must have landed while I was sleeping. How dare you do that? Blah, blah, blah. And the dynamics of this confrontation are really interesting. The captain, who you would think would be a real take control kind of person, is played by David Morse as like a real back scenes kind of person. When Bronson Pinchot gets into his face, he doesn't back down, but he's not really aggressive about it. He's like in sort of the customer is always right kind of mode, but also strangely quiet. I think he's in a little bit of shock and kind of scared by the situation. Nick, on the other hand, who's just a random passenger, is taking an active hand in like, I'll get us into the cockpit. We got to figure out what's going on. He's definitely more a driver of the situation. So when Toomey rolls up with his complaints, it's not the captain that shuts him down. It's Nick that shuts him down and gets into a confrontation where the captain doesn't really say anything. So it's a little bit of an odd dynamic from the start. Now, Toomey is getting all into Nick's face, and Nick is going to shut him down with the incredible nose hold he puts on him. he even calls it like the Spock from Star Trek neck pinch, except for he does it as like a face nose hold, which is crazy. But in this scene, there are some lines that Toomey says, like, do you know who I am? And in the original Langoliers, his acting is way over the top. I don't know if it's because Tom Holland wanted it that way. I mean, we get a lot of that in Fright Night, right? Or if Bronson Pinchot was just going for it, I'm not sure. But due to the backstory of Toomey that we're going to find out, he's a severely abused kid with a very domineering father. Think like a Norman Bates situation, except for with father instead of mother, and with a huge splash of Succession, because it's all like business and discipline related. And there are flashback scenes we're going to get during the Langoliers, where we see Toomey's father berating him as a small child, which is a similar structure to like the It novel and miniseries, right? Where sometimes we're dealing with adults, sometimes we're dealing with the kid versions. And by seeing what the kids went through, you get why the adults are where they're at. Now, unfortunately, that doesn't really work that well in the Langoliers because the acting is like way off. It's way high, screamy, hyperacting. But in Timekeepers, when Toomey does the lines, the paper on the screen rips a little and shows you a little bit of the young Toomey as a kid's face while he's yelling at Nick. And he says to Nick, "You don't know who I am." And Nick says this incredible response, "I do know who you are. You're a scared little boy who covers his insecurity with aggression." Now, this is super interesting psychologically, but in the Langoliers, you don't get any of this at all. It's all swamped by the ridiculousness of what's happening. But with the genius innovation of splicing the later flashback scene into this scene in a peekaboo way, I got a chill when Nick just flatly goes, "I know who you are. You're a scared little kid." And there you see through a little tear in the paper on the screen, the scared little kid inside Toomey. And also there's an amazing moment when he's yelling, "I have to get to this meeting. I have a 9 a.m. meeting in Boston with tens of millions of dollars on the line. And I have to get to this meeting." And when he's yelling, like, "I need to get there," the paper splits again and you see his father, like the skull beneath the skin of this guy. Like, Toomey is not his own person. He is literally possessed by his past. And I'm sure that's what Stephen King intended. And it might even be what Tom Holland intended when he was doing the Langoliers. But like, I'm sure Ed Wood intended for Plan 9 from Outer Space or Bride of the Monster to be really scary. But because there's so much ridiculous going on, it's not. And Timekeepers fixes all of that. It is astounding. If I was David Morse or Dean Stockwell or Bronson Pinchot, I would have seen this remix, I'll call it, of Langoliers done by this genius and just wept. He has saved and enhanced all the little nuances of their acting and put them in the place they should have been to make it really hit. And you can tell by the way Toomey reacts to anything going wrong, like, why is the plane deviating? Why are strange things happening? A lot of the other passengers, as terrified, because it's a terrifying situation to have everyone around you disappear and you don't know why, and you're in the middle of a night sky flying blind. And a lot of them think like a nuclear war happened on the ground because the radio's not reaching any towers, no airports are talking back, no other planes are talking to them. They are as alone as Matt Damon's character in The Martian is. And that's a terrifying feeling. But they're rolling with it. They're starting to band together. Dean Stockwell, who plays a mystery author, is starting to make deductions about what's happening, even though it's really early in the game yet. The other characters are really starting to try to support each other emotionally. But Toomey can't do any of that. Any kind of disruption threatens his entire self-esteem and character. So what I'm saying here is the other characters stay whole. They stay who they are. But Toomey starts to splinter anytime he runs into an obstacle or opposition. Well, how does this movie depict that visually? Unbelievable. Toomey's character has this tendency to tear sheets of paper when he's anxious or upset. It's one of the few creepy touches in the original Langoliers miniseries that kind of worked. Well, in this confrontation, Nick hurts Toomey by putting him in a hold, shuts him down, and then waves him off. And the rest of the passengers kind of shuttle him back, trying to intervene to make sure there's not a full-blown confrontation. And as he's heading back, the screen splits into strips and he fragments. So you're seeing like six partial Toomeys going back into the distance as they disappear back into the rear of the airplane cabin, which is exactly what's emotionally happening to Toomey and was happening to him in the miniseries. But unless you were like the most motivated watcher to ever watch the Langoliers miniseries, you would have never caught it. Here, it's so elegantly shown, and it's not even like show-offy. It's not over the top. It's just elegant. There's a really interesting scene a little later in the movie that has the dynamic of Stephen King's The Mist with Mrs. Carmody, played by the great Marcia Gay Harden, but kind of flipped because it's basically Toomey against the whole rest of the plane. But in this case, it's not the English agent leading them the charge against Toomey. It's a character named Don, played by the great Frankie Faison, who was the commissioner on the HBO series The Wire. But pretty much all the passengers are sick of Toomey's shit at this point, and they back him down during another one of his screaming fits. Now, when I saw this scene, I saw actually a YouTube reaction to the Langoliers miniseries, and this scene came in for some of the like worst ridicule of the entire reaction, because there are moments in this scene when Toomey is supposed to be having like a Jack Torrance like freak out, but his voice kind of cracks a little bit and the reactor's like, what's happening to Bronson Pinchot? Is he going through puberty? And he was contorting his face so badly that they were doing this gimmick where they were holding like a ruler or yardstick up to the screen to try to measure how many inches apart his mouth was open during the screaming matches. And even without the reaction video, I found the scene completely over the top and comical. But in Timekeepers, this exact scene, it comes across like when the scene was over, I was like, Bronson Pinchot should win an Academy Award. And the crazy thing about it is that Timekeepers doesn't achieve it in this case by addition. So it's not like the cool paper tearing effects or the cool isolating certain characters with outline effects. It's not by animation. It's simply by what they take out and the editing. They removed all the things he did during the scene that were ridiculous, and they only left the things that he did that were incredibly intense and dark. It's nothing short of sorcery. I feel like these filmmakers could win Rob Schneider an Academy Award for acting over Anthony Hopkins. It's ridiculous. There's a moment that was even cool in the original Langoliers miniseries, but gets even cooler here, when Kate Maberly's character, Dinah, the blind girl, who's with her mom, intuits or has a psychic vision that Toomey sees all of the passengers on the plane as monsters. And he literally sees that in the ABC miniseries. We don't see him seeing that. We don't figure out how Dinah, who apparently has some version of The Shining, figures out in this one. It is kind of almost by deduction in Timekeepers, which gives her a little bit more of the intelligence the character clearly was meant to have. But anyway, the cool part about it here is that when she says to her mom, "Toomey, that guy sees us all as monsters," the mom says, "Oh, honey, I'm sure he doesn't," which is like the mistake all adults make in all horror movies when any like younger kids or teens come to them and tell them that a vampire has come to town or like something really bad has happened or there's a person who can evade my dreams and kill me. And the parents are like, no, take some sleeping pills. In the miniseries, the mom comes off as being comforting in a very scary panic situation. In this one, there's a touch of that, but she also comes across as just wrong. And that's way more interesting. There's an absolutely spectacular moment when they're about to land and discover that the airport in Bangor, Maine, Stephen King International Airport, is deserted and that they're in a Twilight Zone episode. And as they're coming in for the landing, of course, Toomey is sitting in his seat right next to poor Don, and he's doing his tearing sheets of paper thing with a magazine. And Don turns to him and says, "Can you please stop doing that? It's driving me crazy." And Toomey just keeps doing it harder. Now, in the miniseries, this is just a two-shot camera cutting back and forth, showing you one person in one chair, one person in the other one. In Timekeepers, it's a split screen like De Palma did in Carrie. And when Don says, "Please stop doing that," it pushes so that he's half the screen and Toomey's half the screen. And then he gets a little bigger as he asks. And then Toomey starts ripping harder and he becomes 80% of the screen and pushes Don into 20% of the screen. And it's such a good way to depict how when you're sitting on a plane with a annoying person nearby, everything they're doing is intruding on your space. You literally can't get the annoying sound off you. They're crowding you. So they pull off a perfect landing in an abandoned airport, deserted airport. And the nine passengers, actually it's eight, because I think at this point Nick is in the co-pilot seat helping out the captain. And when they land, the eight people left in the cabin, minus clearly Toomey, put up this little gentle applause. Like, you know, like if you were in a plane and there was like a lot of turbulence and you landed, like the passengers might like give a little round of applause. It's such a cute touch of like normal reaction still carrying over into a totally insane world. Now, before we get to the end and the actually terrifying Langoliers instead of the ridiculous-looking Langoliers, the crazy connections between the Perfect Strangers cast here blew my mind. So the HBO series The Leftovers has a kind of similar plot worldwide to the Langoliers, right? Like a chunk of people disappear. Nobody knows why. And there's this completely random Perfect Strangers connection that just fluked into happening in The Leftovers by a simple joke where after the rapture, one of the characters, I think it's Scott Glenn's character, says to someone else, "Hey, did you know that the entire cast of Perfect Strangers were raptured? There wasn't a single person left behind." And it turns out that Mark Lynn Baker, the other actor opposite Bronson Pinchot, in the plot of The Leftovers, was embarrassed that everyone else got raptured and he didn't. So he faked his own rapture. And it just blows my mind that the Langoliers was clearly an influence on Lost, and that this is a Damon Lindelof thing, since he created both Lost and Leftovers. And we have a Perfect Strangers Bronson Pinchot in Langoliers and Mark Lynn Baker in Leftovers. It's one of the strangest connections of an absolutely absurd comedy to similar dark horror fantasy dystopian projects that could have ever happened. Now, one of the great things that a horror movie can do, or honestly any kind of artistic production, is leave something unexplained, but not from laziness or forgetting to close the loop on it, but leaving it purposefully in an interesting way. The way that the way that Jack Torrance escapes from where Shelley Duvall locked him in The Shining with the door clicking open is never explained. And it sits there and like burns in your brain, like what happened. It's the same thing the Sopranos did with the Russian character from the Pine Barrens episode. Did he live? Did he die? No one knows. It was never resolved, but it was always vaguely sinister. Well, this is going to sound absurd because The Langoliers was a terrible miniseries, but there's like a profound thing buried in there that Timekeepers digs out. And what that is Bronson Pinchot's character Toomey is screaming at everyone in a sheer bullying panic for half the movie that he has to get to this meeting in Boston, this 9 a.m. business meeting. At one point he says, the financial fates of nations might hinge on this meeting, which is the amounts quoted here are like a little like $50 million, which at the time this was made is a significant sum of money, but not nation changing. But so he could just be half crazy or half whatever. But here's the interesting thing that you don't really catch from the miniseries. He purposefully detonated his own job. He hasn't made the company he's working for $50 million. He's lost them $50 million. And he's still super eager to get to this meeting where he's going to tell the president of the company, Stephen King, and the board of directors that he's lost all this money for them. Now, this is a meeting. Put yourself in his shoes. If you had just lost your employer $50 million and they were summoning you to a meeting and an emergency was giving you an excuse not to go to that meeting, that seems great. But he is so determined to get there. And he actually says at one point to another character that he's planning to be fired. So he's not trying to get there to like fight for his job or explain what happened or save it. It's a bizarre motivation. Now, right before Toomey gets eaten by the Langoliers in the final-ish sequence of this movie, he attends a meeting that the Boston meeting happens on the runway of the airport in Bangor, courtesy of the magical powers of the Shining Girl. Dina, she kind of projects this a little bit. Maybe it's also in his head because he's completely losing his mind. But there is the board of directors and Stephen King himself. And Bronson Pinchot is just standing in the runway of the airport, but he thinks this meeting is really happening. And he seems so eager to break the news to them that he fucked them. And that he lost. He wants to be doomed. But something really magical happens here because you have these moments of Bronson Pinchot's character, of Toomey yelling at Stephen King, I didn't make you money, I lost you money. And Stephen King looking at him back. Now, the board of directors is shocked. But the way Stephen King plays it is interesting. He stays pretty neutral. It actually looks like he's kind of smiling a bit. Now, this is in the miniseries. This is just an insane moment. But in the elegance of the construction of Timekeepers, it comes across a little different. It comes across like a character of Stephen King's, a Stephen King creation, taunting him that I didn't make you a ton of money this time. I lost money. And when you think about what a hardworking author like Stephen King has to go through to become one of the wealthiest authors in the history of the world, to become a brand, to become a merchandise, to fear losing your edge and selling out, and to have this scene where one of your characters, who's half villain, half victim, arrive on the scene and just yell at you over and over again, Ha! I didn't make you money like you thought I would. I lost you a ton of money. It's got a very strange creative edge. But lest any of you Stephen King characters that he just created are out there listening to this right now, I highly advise you not to buy that Stephen King is really conflicted by this, because immediately after Toomey tells Stephen King that he didn't make him a bunch of money, he lost the money, he gets eaten alive by the Langoliers. Hell hath no fury like a businessman author scorned. So the rest of our merry band of adventurers are trying to get back on their plane, head back towards the rip in time that they accidentally flew through, which turned out to be like an aurora borealis, northern lights over California weird weather situation that once in a while rips a hole in time. And they're trying to take off with the plane out of Bangor and go back to where they came from. And the timekeepers of eternity show up and they chew up Toomey's character alive. They start to eat the airport. They start to eat the runway. They start to eat all the equipment and the cars, and they head for the plane. And David Morse heroically gets the plane off the ground in the nick of time, right before reality gets devoured. And Dean Stockwell delivers the amazing line of, "Now we know what happens to yesterday. Yesterday doesn't just fade into the past. The timekeepers come up and get rid of it in the most efficient way possible. They eat it." Now, Stephen King is really interesting with endings and the construction of endings. The criticism about him when he was a young author was he just blew everything up all the time. The Overlook Hotel actually blows up in the novel The Shining. Obviously, Carrie blows up the prom, et cetera, et cetera. So, or, you know, just wipe out the villain, like crush the car with Christine. And I don't know if he let that criticism get into his head or if he just was growing as an artist and trying other things, but he started to develop this knack of going way in the other direction and overcompensating and having a whole bunch of stuff happen after the ending. So the terrible 2020 remake of the Stand miniseries, which was a good cast and had like some good effects, but was absolutely awful in its editing. The Las Vegas exploding climactic moment in The Stand happens in the second to last episode of the 2020 miniseries. So Stephen King did the ending he was criticized for, and then he personally came on and wrote the last episode of that miniseries, which was a whole bunch of other shenanigans about characters falling down wells and people falling back in love and meeting Mother Abigail. And I think Flag ends up going to get a tribe somewhere to worship him. Just all kinds of weird stuff that was, you know, kind of touching when it worked, but goes on way longer than you'd expect from the climactic blowing up of everything and killing of the villain. So something similar happens in the ABC Langoliers production, where the plane takes off, escapes the Langoliers, and then there's like a full, I don't know, 15 more minutes of them flying around, trying to find the rip in time, getting back to the airport that they originally took off from, figuring out time had to catch up to them because they got there too early. And then like people start to appear around them. And then, I kid you not, if you haven't seen the original Langoliers miniseries, they do like a hop, skip, and a jump in a line, like holding hands almost in a row, like to celebrate that they made it, that they didn't get eaten by the Langoliers. And the whole miniseries just ends on this incredibly corny, like them, like group high five, kick line moment. Well, timekeepers of eternity will have none of that. We board the plane, they take off, they see all the earth getting eaten below them, behind them, everything. They're in a dark sky at night. And then they charge through the incredibly rendered time rip in the sky. And the pilot, David Morse's character, says, oh my God, it's so beautiful, or something like that. And in this version, it really is gorgeously, gorgeously constructed. They enter it, and then their pilots disappear. The plane slightly tilts. The chewing sound of the Langoliers come in, and we go to credits. It's so much more powerful, so much more horrifying, so creepier than the ending of the Langoliers ending in a way like a Magnum PI episode would have. Timekeepers of Eternity is absolute genius. Just a ravishing piece of work and an incredible save done on a really good idea from Stephen King and Tom Holland that just got poorly executed for whatever multiple reasons. And it really got me thinking that the hope that this thing gave me is unlike almost any experience I've ever had with a horror movie. Right now, I'm not talking about, this is meta now, I'm not talking about hope because of the bleak ending or the characters or whatever. Like, there's a lot of interesting stuff that happens there too, but I've gone on too long about this already. The thing that's really, that gave me hope here is, what else could we do this for? Like, what else could this genius come in and save? Like, I imagined a world where I woke up tomorrow and these genius filmmakers had given me an incredible black and white dark version of Jason Takes Manhattan, right? Where they took everything that was stupid out and they made everything that looked dumb look creepy and interesting. They found actual plot points that could have been emotional or complex or whatever with the characters. And then they made half of the runtime of it. Let's say they turned a 3-hour thing into an hour. So I imagine the Jason Takes Manhattan for them would run like 30, 40, right? So like it would be 10 in the boat and the whole rest of it would actually be in Manhattan where it should have been. They can save Jason Takes Manhattan. I think of the Stand miniseries from 2020 that we just talked about. That was super bloated. I mean, it was what, 9-10 episodes? Are you kidding me? And they could cut that down to a mean 3 hours of like Cabinet of Dr. Caligari meets Dr. Strangelove. It would be insanely good. I have a feeling these people could give me like a 1-hour version of The Northman that would give me nightmares for weeks and probably make more sense than the actual movie does. And now, speaking of Cormac McCarthy, there's long been rumored adaptations of his greatest novel, Blood Meridian, which is famously an unfilmable novel. And if they do an adaptation of this and it comes out next year or whatever, and it's terrible, which would be a real blow because it's one of my favorite novels I've ever read, I can have this little hope, right? In my heart, I can hold on to and be like, well, maybe some other genius will come along and remix this adaptation 10 years later, 20 years later, and it'll become its own masterpiece. This is such a gift. So Timekeepers of Eternity is a very weird movie. It's a very brave and adventurous idea. I'm sure a lot of people who try it will hate it, but I don't care. I'm giving it my highest recommendation. I think it's one of the most amazing things I've seen out of horror in the last few years. And it hit just right on a day where some really somber news came across, and I can't thank it enough for that. I found a way to watch Timekeepers by just internet searching the title and then setting it to video and setting it to longest duration video and found it. I can't remember where, but if you see it, I wish you good watching. And I'm the world's biggest fan of this, so if you appreciate it and you want to talk about it, send a message to Horror Weekly on Facebook at Horror Weekly and let me know. Happy to get into conversations about the movie or just hear, yeah, I loved it too, and give it back to you. Now, to close out, here's the weird tribute to Cormac McCarthy. So there is a movie called The Counselor that I think a lot of people missed. It's got like an insane cast, Javier Bardem and Brad Pitt and Cameron Diaz, just a ton of people. And of course, if you're inclined to read, you should read something of his in honor. His last two novels just recently came out, The Passenger and Stella Maris. The Passenger is more horror. None of it's horror, but The Passenger, particularly the opening scenes, have some really dark, horror-ish stuff. Stella Maris doesn't, unless you're just scared of pure existential thought. But I'm going to make a weird recommendation here. There is a movie that is mostly considered horror, at least horror thriller, that I think has captured the tone of Cormac McCarthy's universe better than anything besides No Country for Old Men, which I assume you've seen. And that movie is Night of the Hunter with Robert Mitchum, directed by Charles Laughton, the only movie he ever directed. Great, the great genius Charles Laughton. Now, obviously, this movie was made way before Cormac McCarthy became known, so they don't have anything to do with each other in that sense. But the starkness of Cormac McCarthy's world, the uncompromising nature of his universe, is a tone that you might get a little bit from No Country for Old Men, but Night of the Hunter has it too, strangely. I don't know if Cormac McCarthy ever saw this movie or what he might have thought of it, but I'm going to watch it tonight in honor of him, plus read a little of his stuff. So rest in peace, the great Cormac McCarthy. Timekeepers of Eternity is a weird, goosebumpy thing to combine with this kind of day, considering how much more dark the highlighting of the fact that time just comes up behind you and gobbles things up. Shakespeare had a great line where he said something about dropping things over and time is just, it's like giving donations to oblivion. We'll always have his amazing work, and that's enough. So thank you so much for putting up with this very bizarre, I'm sure, episode on a day that I was kind of rattled. We'll get back to more traditional horror next week. And until next Wednesday, have a great horror week.
Television as an ABC miniseries. Imagine you're asleep on a crowded flight to Boston. But when you wake up, only 10 people are left on the plane.
Where is everybody? No one's driving the plane.
No pilot, no crew, and no one on the ground.
What are they doing? Have nuclear war?
I really don't want to go down there.
And tonight...
The Langoliers are coming.
Oh my God, look.
With danger all around them, no one is safe.
The sound is coming close.
Gotta get out of here now.
Can they get back to the world they knew?
We need 50,000 pounds of fuel, otherwise we crash and burn
before this world no longer exists.
We're all out of time.
One of us will have to die.
Starring Patricia Wedding, Dean Stockwell, David Morse, and Bronson Pinchot. Fasten your seatbelt. The stunning conclusion of Stephen King's The Langoliers. Next. Tonight's presentation brought to you by Haeger. Stuff you can wear.